Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This week, it's my pleasure to bring to you a presentation from the LDN Book Volume 2 Tour, October 2020.
Yes, so thank you everybody for joining us for this leg of the new book tour for Linda Elsiegood. We are going to be featuring the low-dose naltrexone book, Volume 2, which is going to be on sale at both Mark Drugs locations. What I want to do is introduce, the format of this is going to be three speakers. First, we're going to have Linda Elsiegood tell us her story about how LDN, low-dose naltrexone, has changed her life. She was diagnosed with MS in the aughts, and it has really changed her perspective, and that's what actually motivated her to start the LDN Research Trust, because of how much of an impact this very low-dose old medication has actually impacted her life. So I'd like to introduce first Linda Elsiegood with the Low Dose Naltrexone Research Trust, and she's going to be explaining mostly what the aims of this trust is for, the idea of how LDN Research Trust is actually going to be promoting and funding some of the research going forward, and how many new exciting conditions that LDN can be used for. So I'll introduce Linda Elsiegood. She's calling in from England, so we'll have a Q&A session when she's complete, and then if you have any questions for her in the later stages of this book tour, then we'll have to probably email her, because I imagine it's going to be getting pretty late by the time we're done with this conference. So thank you very much, Linda Elsiegood, for joining us today.
Okay, thank you very much, Craig. Okay, so briefly, my story is out there everywhere, but just briefly, in 2013, I was told I was secondary progressive MS and there was nothing more that could be done for me. And at that point, the left-hand side of my body was numb with pins and needles. I had twitching muscles, restless legs, burning limbs. I had vertigo. I had no balance. I'd lost my bowel and bladder control. Cognitively, it was as though English was my second language. I couldn't recall vocabulary. I would try and put a sentence together in my head and it would come out completely back to front. Nobody could understand what I was saying. I was choking on my food, slurring my words. It was awful. And to be told that, you know, by a neurologist, you know, I'm really sorry, you're secondary progressive MS and there's nothing more that can be done for you. I mean, that is devastating. I can remember my mum saying to me, it's only giving a name to how you feel and how you are. It doesn't make you any worse by having the diagnosis, which was obviously correct, but it was very difficult to think that the medical profession, there was nothing else they could try. I had been on Rebif, which is an interferon drug. I think I was on that for about 8 months, and that just made me far sicker, but that was the only thing I had. Having said that, I did have some medication to stop me from using the toilet as often, but that didn't work either. It just made me have a dry mouth. So I had to prove everybody wrong that there was something that could be done somewhere. And I could only concentrate for 10 minutes at a time. And going back to 2003, the internet wasn't as it is today. It was difficult to connect with people that wasn't Facebook back then. So I managed to find some people who were similar to myself, who had got MS, who had already been taking LDN, and they were very kind, some of them, to let me phone them, talk to them, and everybody said the same, that if it doesn't do me any good. It's not going to do me any harm. I managed to find a doctor in the UK, Dr. Bob Lawrence in Wales, who has sadly passed the last few months. And he gave me all the information. I took the information to my own doctor, who said that she would have a word with the partners in the practice. They voted not to prescribe LDN for me, but she said that she was really interested in the information, and if it was her, she would like to try it. So if I could find somebody to prescribe it for me, she would monitor me. So I thought that was really kind of her to do that. And as I say, I explained what it was I was living with at that time. And in just 3 weeks, and it's not the same for everybody, and we have a caveat that LDN isn't a miracle drug or a cure, and it doesn't work for everybody. But for me, in that 3 weeks, it was like living in a television set that wasn't tuned in before LDN. And it was suddenly that all the knobs had been twisted and I could start to see properly. I could process my thoughts. I could begin to speak. It was amazing. It was a big wow moment. And every week I improved. I just kept improving and improving. It took me like 18 months to get completely like where I felt I was me again. But it was, I just can't explain what it was like. So what did I want to do? Did I want to say I'm okay and carry on? Or did I want to tell everybody with that was in that deep, dark place that I was in? And it was a no-brainer. I wanted to tell everybody about LDN. We became a registered charity in 2004. It was very, very difficult to get the charity status. Cost a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort. But the more that people kept saying no, the more I was determined that I was going to do it. So I will just show you my screen if I can. Can you see that? Okay, so this is the LDN Research Trust website. Whoops. And I just want to explain to everybody what we have. We get so many emails from people who on social media who don't realize we have a website. They tend to think the social media is all that we are. So here we have about the trust, our founders, our doctors, and Dr. Sarah Zieldorf is one of the doctors there. How you can become a volunteer. If you're a medical professional, you can join us, you can make a donation, and there's the contact us. So what is LDN? And it explains all the different things there. And this is really interesting. We have a list of conditions that LDN can help with. There's about 200 of them, I believe. And they're all under different headings. And let me just see, neurological diseases. So MS is amongst all of these that you can see here. I mean, there are just so many conditions that LDN can help with. And it's a start if you want to check if the condition that you have, you know, if LDN is likely to work, it possibly is in that list. The list is growing all the time. We also have our LDN guides. Dr. Sarah Zieldorf and her team put that together for us. Clinical trials and studies, all the latest ones are added monthly. And let's go carry on with the MS theme. Here we are. And that then brings up all the clinical trials and studies that have MS in them in the currently. You can see there are many, 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 many. The list goes on and on. But it's amazing how many different studies have been done, and there's more being done all the time. We have articles on LDN, we have a blog, we have nutrition and lifestyle, and we have our new questions and answers. So many people were asking the same questions. So we now have a list of questions that we have on there of our frequently asked questions, which have proven to be very, very helpful, especially with the social media. And then under LDN prescriptions, find a pharmacist, a prescriber, a vet, telemed consultations at LDN Marketplace, and again, membership. We do an awful lot with media to try and get out our radio show. That it goes out on Mixcloud, it goes out on Captivate FM, all the different things on there actually. Google Podcasts, there's Amazon Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Oh yes, there's Captivate. But there are about another dozen different platforms that aren't as well known. Well, not by me anyway. We have our newsletters, different social media channels, as in we have a Facebook group with nearly 38,000 people. We have a medical professionals only private secret. I think I can't remember how many we've got on there currently. But we've also had 5 LDN documentaries, and they're all there to... 6, there we are, all there to view for free. We have one on cancer, Lyme disease, got the LDN story about it in Ireland and Scotland, and for opioid and pain management, which is really interesting if you haven't already seen that. And then we have the events. This is where you'll find the details for the book tour and launch, where there are other upcoming events. And very soon we'll be advertising the LDN 2021 conference, which is in Pennsylvania. And here you can click to watch the presentations of the previous past conferences. So there is an awful lot of information on there. We don't hold any information that is private and secret to do with LDN. It's all on the website. Everything that we do that involves patients, if they take part in a survey or they sign up for the newsletter, everything is compliant, secure, and not shared with anyone. So there is never any problems with that. And the Facebook group is a closed group, so you can ask questions, put your story there. It's not going to be shown on your newsfeed. It is a private closed group, so it stays in the group. So that's what we've been doing with the website and trying to help and support people that way. I'll just close this now if I can work out how to do it. Stop, there we are. Okay. So as Craig was saying about the LDN Research Trust funding a trial, part of the requirement to become a charity, the Charity Commission in the end, after months of correspondence back and forwards, they said that the first trial that we would have to support would be an MS trial. And at that point, I think it was about 5 months later, it was okay, that's what we will do. Initially, we tried to raise money for clinical trials, but to do that, you had to have a trial protocol in place to be able to do that. It had to be gold standard, double-blind, placebo trial, a large number of people over a long period of time. It was so difficult back in 2004 to get anybody to want to do a clinical trial or a study, and especially with MS, because it can be so variable. So the other thought was, okay, instead of trying to get a trial for something that nobody even knows what LDN is. And as you can see from the website, the trials and studies that have been done, there are numerous now, but back then that wasn't the case. So if we turned it over, how do we get people to help us was to try and get more doctors on board prescribing LDN as the first starting place. And of course, pharmacists play a big role in compounding LDN, shipping it out to patients, getting to know the patients that come into the pharmacies. So that was quite a big game changer, really, for LDN. More and more doctors are prescribing LDN. There are more and more pharmacists who are LDN literate. Back in the day, there were pharmacies who didn't understand about LDN. They would compound it with a slow release filler, where it had to be a fast release filler. And I'm sure Sarah and Craig are going to talk about the compounding and how the mechanism of LDN works. That's not what I'm going to talk about, but getting pharmacists on board and trying to get everybody to compound it in the same way, making sure that it's good quality LDN for patients. So moving forward, I'm actually in talks with Dr. Gerard Younger to do a trial and study for LDN on MS. I heard from him just a couple of days ago. He's got ideas and plans in place. So once we see a trial proposal and it's agreed and accepted by our medical board, we could then start to fundraise for a trial, but it would be very expensive. But he does pilot studies. He doesn't actually do a full-blown trial himself. He gets the protocol, he trials it, tested it, and then he gets other people involved, especially with funding. So that's really exciting. Does anybody have any questions? I don't know how we see the questions. Do you have any questions there, Craig?
We have, hello?
Yes.
We do have questions about when you had your first doctor that actually wanted to monitor you, yes, but was afraid to actually prescribe it. We have one question asking about how long it took you to find someone who was willing to prescribe it. And then what happened after that, as far as what was that spark that made you want to actually start this charitable organization?
Okay. I was very lucky because the doctor in Wales, Dr. Bob Lawrence, the doctor who'd given me all the information, he was a private doctor. So the information that I took to the doctor, she would have prescribed it for me, but she wasn't a partner in the practice. So the partners voted not to allow her to prescribe it for me. So that is why she agreed to monitor me. A really nice doctor, a very, very young doctor who was open-minded. So that was refreshing too. The spark that led me to starting the charity was I had never felt so useless and unable to achieve anything as I did when I was really sick. You know, it was a struggle I didn't get out of bed unless I'd got a doctor's appointment or a hospital, as in getting dressed, getting out of bed. I mean, I did go and shower and with help and everything, but actually getting dressed, didn't happen. And I was just lying in bed and it was like watching one of those calendars where it's the first, the second, the third, what had I done? What had I achieved? And the answer was nothing. You know, I was surviving from meals to shower to sleeping. It was very depressing. So I really, really wanted to help people who were in that similar position as myself. That was why I work and I don't get paid. I do it because I want to help people.
It's a very compelling story. And really, thank you for sharing that with us. One thing that I forgot to mention at the beginning, clearly we got some experienced Zoomers, but other people who want to ask questions, when you go down on the bottom of your page, you'll see a little Q&A thing where you can actually type in questions about for Linda, Dr. Zielsdorf, and myself later on. So we'll be answering those as we go along this presentation. But another one came up was that, as far as you mentioned how your first doctor was, you know, couldn't do it. She wanted to, but she couldn't. What are some of the icebreakers? What are ways that you can actually convince your doctor that this might be an appropriate medication for you? After all, you got to be your own advocate when it comes to your own healthcare.
Mm-hmm. The information that Dr. Bob Lawrence gave me was quite basic. We have these user guides now. We have a prescriber guide, a patient guide, and a dosing protocol guide. And it is quite comprehensive, but not too wordy. It's not, you know, doctors are very busy. They can just read through it very easily. And I'm sure you agree, don't you, Sarah? It gives the basic information in a format that would appeal to doctors. I mean, first of all, you have to decide, is LDN something that you want to try and give it a go? And then find a prescriber. And we have those lists on our website of prescribers who are all experienced in LDN. I don't know the ones that take insurance, what they actually prescribe LDN for. But if it's not a pain specialist or a rheumatologist, if it's a, we call them general practitioners, I don't know what you call them over there, but they will prescribe LDN for just about any condition, you know, if they think it's appropriate for that patient. No prescriber is going to prescribe LDN for a patient, even if the patient is trying desperately hard to get the doctor to prescribe it. If the doctor doesn't believe it's going to do that patient any good, quite rightly, the doctor won't prescribe.
And just to add on to that, sometimes you're right, the general practitioners are usually the patient, the prescriber that the patient has the closest relationship with, almost know each other on a first name basis. So I do find a lot of times it's easier to convince them than someone who is a way up specialist in certain types of medicine, because they're kind of already have their opinions and their own protocols, and they don't want something else that might interfere with the treatments that they know already work. But it's you bring up a good point, keeping it simple. I understand that doctors are busy, so when I hand them a packet full of information, you know where that's going. It's going into the circular filing cabinet. But if you give them a quick one or two pieces of paper and focus on the side effect profile that I'll get into on the third segment today, that is usually very helpful.
And I'll be happy. I want to preserve Linda's time. I'll be happy to discuss the nuances of what it's like to be a prescriber and how patients might broach the subject with their doctor. And I can speak to the process in the United States. But we actually have a variety of prescribers now, not just GPs or internists, but family med docs and some specialists that have been using LDN now as an important adjunct in their case. So it's actually quite a mixed bag, and it's very individualized. But the number one thing is, if you don't have an open-minded clinician, you're not going to get that medicine. And the other thing that I want to say is that if a doctor or other clinician doesn't feel comfortable prescribing something, they shouldn't. They need to know the mechanism of action, side effects, and since this is compounded, they need to be working and have a working relationship with the compounding pharmacist, a knowledgeable pharmacist. And so we at the LDN Research Trust really work to instill the patient-physician relationship is so important, and also the physician-pharmacist relationship is so incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. And I find there are many nurse prescribers that are prescribing LDN. And if you're paying privately, they are cheaper than a doctor, but it doesn't mean to say they are less experienced in LDN. In many cases, they are writing so many prescriptions, and they often have more time with the patients than a doctor. Would you say that's correct, Sarah?
It's very clinician dependent, but yes, in a standard practice, nurse practitioners and some other clinicians, I bristle at the term mid-levels, but they call them mid-levels or ancillary staff. They often do, especially for insurance practices, they will take more time with patients. But in private practice, we have all walks of life. And in my practice, both nurse practitioner and physician spend an equal amount of time. And that is, you know, designed that way, but we are private practice that way. But it really is dependent on the clinician. It's not the degree that the person has, it's their experience. And you really want to find someone who has great experience writing for low-dose naltrexone and treating patients with LDN.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, I'm going to bid you all a very good time. And I'm going to go to bed.
Good night, Linda.
Okay.
Good night, Linda.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, LINDA, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.